All right, folks, welcome back. A quick turnaround, Mountainless Wire podcast, MWR.com. The reason I say quick turnaround, because if for some reason you didn't listen to our other show, what are you doing? We just broke down transfer portal, secret, not so secret Hawaii meeting on Twitter Spaces. It's transfer portal, but we're here, Matt. This is now our official Mountain West title game preview between San Diego State and Utah State.
Yeah, I mean, but let's put it out there out front, though. If you were just sincerely interested in learning more about Saturday first, we do not blame you.
No, that's fine. The show we just did will be a little bit more, not evergreen, but it'll last longer than this podcast by a couple of days at least.
Definitely.
The only thing that'll change is like probably some more portal guys from Hawaii, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. And maybe a Fresno State head coach. We'll see.
Maybe we'll see.
I didn't ask you this moments ago, but do you have a timeline about when do you think that could happen? Because early signing day is like in 3 weeks.
Indication seems to be that they're going to try and make it happen pretty quickly, same as last time.
Okay. All right. So let's get to the preview. Mountain West football championship game. Utah State on the road. San Diego State, who is sort of hosting this game at Carson, California. Noon Pacific kickoff, Fox. So how would you feel, Matt, if you're a fan of this team and you're not at home, but you're kind of, but you're hosting? Seems a bit awkward, right?
I mean, it is a little strange, but there's little doubt that they've made do.
True.
And 6 points to the fans' credit, basically since I believe the Towson game. Because the Utah game was their first home game of the year, if I'm not mistaken. Towson was the second one. So since the Towson game, their attendance has increased with every home game. And that includes everybody being there on a Black Friday morning last week against Boise State. So it's trending in there. I mean, granted, they haven't cracked 12,000 fans yet.
Not quite.
But they've been on the upswing, and that's a credit to those fans making the trip from San Diego, because that's not an easy trip to make. It's like two and a half hours.
Could be, depending on traffic and time of day. This game, early afternoon, 12, I guess actually afternoon, Aztecs are now a 6-point favorite, over under 50. This is clearly not the, I should bring up, because I'm going to post this about our preseason rankings, how bad we were. But this was nobody in the media, nobody us, unless you're, I hate all the tweets. I'm like, oh, I told you guys didn't listen to us. I'm like, you're just an awesome homer Utah State fan, right? It's like, even those guys had to know this, like our buddy Sam and Logan, like, no, that's not happening. Come on. We're open for bowl eligibility at best, right?
I thought they would get to 6-6.
That's what you did.
So I was optimistic about I was bullish on the Aggies. But even I did not expect this.
A transfer portal helped them greatly. Blake Anderson coming over, keeping Devin Tompkins, who was in the portal, came out of nowhere, getting Logan Bonner, getting Justin Rice, getting these guys to come in. But this, like Utah State, like we mentioned, if you listen to our prior show, we'll just repeat it now and not say prior show, but Utah State was sort of uneven this year. They were more lucky than not in a lot of these games. Like they got the wins. Like win your crappy games, however you get it done. Win these games where you just throw something against the wall and see what happens. But they were like, not that they're lucky, but just close games. Like Washington State come from behind. Air Force is a close game. UNLV was a close game. CSU was a close game. They had a little bit of struggle in the first half versus New Mexico State. And they blew out San Jose State. The Wyoming game's just weird. But I don't want to say that they're typically lucky, because we talked about, you said to Bill C, win expectancy after the fact, pretty low if they were to replay these games. But it doesn't matter. They won the games.
Yeah, and they're not going to apologize for winning.
No, I'm not either. I'm just saying there's reasons to think that, to see where there could be issues in this game for them playing San Diego State, because first of all, Aztecs defense is really good. They have Cameron Thomas, who's really good. A lot of defenders on that team who make plays. And the one thing about this game, which is interesting, you put up seven stats, which was it seven stats, I think it was, right?
To look yes. at.
So go definitely read over that about different stats. It's field position with Matt Araiza, what he can do. That could be countered a little bit if Savon Scarver returns kicks pretty well or punts. So that might be that will play a factor one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Riza pinpointing them inside the 2-yard line or Scarver getting a punt and saving it from going like out of bounds or a weird kick and getting it for a decent return. So mm-hmm. I think one way or the other, special teams will play a big part in this game. I also think obviously clearly Devin Tompkins, because San Diego State's pass defense, there is an ability for them to give up points and yards a little bit. And Devin Tompkins is freaking amazing. And Logan Bonner's, here's the thing, best quarterback, Logan Bonner. Best receiver, Devin Tompkins. Calvin Teller Jr., running back, has taken a big slide, but he's still pretty good. So Utah State has enough offense, I think, to break through at least once or twice in this game to make it within that touchdown, I think.
I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, there's so many things to talk about with this game, just because you're looking at a pair of teams that contrast so starkly with one another. Like, obviously, exactly. Utah State is more well known for, you know, its offense, but, you know, don't overlook a defense that has improved over the course of the year very quietly. And then conversely, obviously, the Aztecs have one of the nation's best defenses, period. But, you know, the typical ground and pound offense hasn't been like all the way back to, you know, your Rashad Penny, Danelle Pumphrey type production. They've been solid, but it's sort of been buoyed, especially in the second half of the year, by quietly improved quarterback play too. And so, yeah, I'm having a hard time thinking about like where you want to start talking about this game. Where do you want to start talking about this game? I'm excited to talk about it.
There's a lot. I want to see Devin Tompkins light up this defense. Because when you look, that's what I think is, he's just the most, out of all the exciting players, he's the most exciting player in the field.
Okay, so let's start there then.
Sorry, Cameron Thomas. I like offense.
No. That's fair. But and because I think if you want to start talking about like individual matchups that could make or break the game, you talk about Tompkins on the one hand, mm-hmm. and then who's going to be responsible for covering him most of the time?
And the other person who's going to be responsible for shadowing him the whole time.
You know, is it going to be Taylor Hawkins, or maybe. is it going to be one of the young guys on that defense? You know, right now, according to their depth chart, you know, the other starter at cornerback is, you know, sophomore Noah Tumblin. You know, if they decide to line up Tompkins on him, is he going to be ready for that? And so, but I think if it does end up being Hawkins, then I think that's a potentially sensational one-on-one matchup that could be, it's going to be worth watching in the same way that, like, you know, you think about the Romeo Dubs, Darren Hall matchup in last year's Nevada, San Diego State game. This has the makings of something like that, in my opinion, just because, you know, I know that we've had sort of a passing discussion about, you know, Pro Football Focus's all conference team.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there were a lot of people, you know, quibbling about like, well, why were these guys picked and stuff like that? Right. My understanding of PFF grades is that they are more or less a reflection of how often a person does their job on any given play more than anything else.
That right? would be a great explanation. Simple explanation.
So with that in mind, I think it's worth noting that I think Tompkins is one of the top two or three wide receivers in the conference. I think he's like right there with, if I remember correctly, Brandon Lewis and Khalil Shakir. But in terms of cornerbacks playing in this game, Taylor Hawkins is far and away the number one graded cornerback by Pro Football Focus. He had an overall grade of 85.5, which is, you know, 17th among FBS cornerbacks, period. So, you know, he's a veteran guy. He knows how to make plays. And, you know, obviously he's not the only one in that secondary that's capable of doing that. You know, Trenton Thompson has a few picks this year. You know, Tumblin and Dallas Branch, I think, each have a pick or two. So, like, you know, that secondary as a unit is playing at a very high level. But, like, if you want to start by talking about, okay, well, what is Tompkins going to be able to do? A lot of that might be defined by how well Hawkins does in bottling him up or not.
Yeah, and we look at overall what San Diego State does defensively in the pass game. Their second completion percentage allowed. They are the best. They only give up, tied for first Wyoming yards per play, pass play. They have 15 interceptions. Their QB rating against is the best in the conference. They give up a lot of yards because teams have to throw a lot against them. So the yards per game, I don't care about, but teams throw a ton against them, like almost 40 times a game.
But I do think, though, that the more important players in this game, and this is true of in terms of, you know, basically every sort of element of the game that you could think of, I think the secondary players, like the role players, are going to have a much bigger impact than the primary targets. So, like, you think about Tompkins. I think about someone like Brandon Bowling, who, you know, just to dip back into the Pro Football Focus grades again real quick, he's the second best graded receiver in this matchup. And you know, while he's, you know, in terms of like, you know, and I'm looking primarily at like starting lineups and stuff like that, you know, he's ceded a lot of ground in the second half of the year as far as being a starter to, you know, the tight end Carson Terrell. But that hasn't made him any less productive. Like, he's basically been the best one of, if not the best slot receiver in the Mountain West this year. And so, you know, I expect that that could be a potentially dangerous matchup for the Aztecs to be aware of, because in the instances where they got pushed this year, I think most heavily, and I'm thinking primarily of like the Fresno State game, the UNLV game, and the Nevada game. One thing that all those games had in common were that it was the secondary guys who made the most impact. So like against the Bulldogs, for example, like Jalen Cropper had 6 catches for 84 yards, but Josh Kelly had 5 for 107. Including a 69-yard catch. You know, Carrick Wheatball was the one guy who scored a touchdown. You know, four catches on 6 targets. So, you know, and if, you know, if you want to look at the Nevada game again, of course, Romeo Dubs had a big game. You know, 9 catches, 2 touchdowns. Torrey Horton had 8 catches in that game too. You know, Melquan Stovall had 5 catches. You know, in the UNLV game, like, it was Charles Williams catching passes out of the backfield that was catching the Aztecs off guard. And they did it without Kyle Williams. So Stevie Jenkins stepped up and had that, you know, big, you know, handful of big plays. You know, they got production out of the tight end, you know, Zyle Griffin, Giovanni Faolo. And so that's where, you know, I look at that and I think, well, that seems like exactly the kind of environment that someone like Bowling can thrive in. Because he's not going to be going up against the number one guy. He's going to be going up against, you know, someone who might be lining up in the slot, or, you know, or a safety like, you know, Trenton Thompson or Sedarius Barfield, or another guy who has definitely come on strong later in the year. One guy I'm very interested to see what kind of role he plays, CJ Baskerville, because we haven't talked about him a lot. And Barfield is the guy who's listed as the starter on the 2-deep at the boundary warrior position. But Baskerville is the guy who has started the last 2 games for the Aztecs at that position. And more importantly, to dip back into those PFF grades one more time, real quick, if you eliminate snap count requirements, he's the number one graded safety in this game, which again, small sample, maybe sample, sample size, you know, caveat.
Too small.
But, you know, he's got a 79.4 grade in coverage, which I think if you're asking him to line up against, you know, the slot guys, you know, like Bowling, you know, like Derek Wright or whomever, you know, someone like Baskerville, someone like Barfield could have a very big impact on, you know, Utah State's ability to either create big plays or not.
Let me ask you this. Okay. If Devin Tompkins just slowed down, I know Utah State has some good receivers, but typically it's Tompkins or bust almost. They have guys like Derek Wright, 40 catches. Brandon Bowling, 44 catches. What would you say? I'll answer this question too, but I'll ask you, like, what do you think the baseline would be for Utah State to win with Devin Tompkins? Does he need, currently he averages 7.3 catches per game.
Yeah.
128.6 yards and 9 touchdowns. So for them to win Utah State, kind of like, what do you think his stat line would need to be for, say, hey, they could win if Tompkins does this?
I think he could be like, I think he could be slightly under that per game average. I don't think he can disappear in this.
Could an 8 for 94 with 1 touchdown be enough? Like he did against Washington State.
Yes, it could.
But not a 4 for 60, no touchdown performance versus Boise State.
And I'll tell you why. Because Tompkins, Derek Wright, Brandon Bowling each average 16.9 yards per catch. And that was something that Bill Connolly noted in his preview of the game. The bigger problem for Utah State is they have been explosive, but they haven't always been efficient. So depending on which success rate metric you want to trust in, you know, Bill Connolly's, you know, I forget exactly how he measures it, but, you know, by his measure, Utah State's only 105th in terms of offensive success rate. If you look at Parker Fleming and his advanced stats preview at StatsOWAR on Twitter, you know, their overall success rate as an offense is only 78th overall. But that involves a very big split between how well they do with the pass, in which they are 23rd, versus how they do on the ground with the running game, in which they are 115th nationally. And so, you know, you sort of, and I think that sort of tracks with how they played this year, where, you know, their big playability has never really been in doubt. The bigger question is, can they access it? Because, you know, as we've seen in a number of slow starts, sometimes it takes them a while to get going. You know, in other cases, and I think this was most recently the case in the Wyoming game, you know, they got off to a fast start. You know, they landed a few haymakers through the air, and then they just couldn't keep it up.
I think that'll be the case, maybe?
Maybe. And maybe that makes for a really useful segue into one of the other things that could definitely play a factor in this game. I would imagine it seems pretty clear that the Aztecs have an advantage in the trenches on defense, because they don't have like a sack rate that blows you away. You know, like their team sack rate is only 7%, which is one of the things I pointed out in those articles. So that's slightly outside the top 50 nationally. It's only 54th. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to nobody's surprise, a lot of that has to do with Cameron Thomas, who has 10 and a half sacks. But, you know, we saw last week, you know, Jonah Tavai knows how to create havoc. Keshawn Banks is no slouch. Those linebackers know how to attack, even if they haven't been quite as disruptive as they were in years past. And so, you know, I look at that and I think, okay, well, how well is this Utah State offensive line going to be able to hold up? Because they have to bring their A game.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And I say that not only in terms of, like, you know, their overall sack rate allowed, which is also just outside the top 50 nationally, but even as recently as last week against New Mexico, like, Logan Bonner's been prone to take a lot of hits, which maybe we haven't paid as much attention to it as we have with, like, someone like, for instance, like Hank Bachmeier at Boise State. But, you know, I think if Utah State wants to win this game, they have to keep Logan Bonner on his feet. For Andrew Peasley has been solid this year, but he's also been a little bit up and down here and there. And so I think their best chance is to just keep him, you know, keep him on the sidelines and keep your starting quarterback upright so he can take shots down the field, which, you know, I look at, again, you know, if you want to narrow in on some of the more individual matchups, you know, you look at Thomas on the one hand, who's, you know, one of the better defenders, one of the highest graded defenders by PFF at any position anywhere in college football. And, you know, I think, well, if they're looking at Utah State's film, they know that there might be a potential hindrance at right tackle in particular, where, to the best of my knowledge, Jacob South isn't going to play in this game. He played pretty well in the first half of the year. You know, he got knocked out, I believe, by injury 2 or 3 weeks ago. You know, Cole Motes has been the guy starting opposite Alfred Edwards at the tackle position. So he's not protecting Logan Bonner's blind side. But if you'll indulge me as far as the PFF grades are concerned real quick, you know, his overall grade is only 55.1. And so if you want to compare that to South, you know, South's overall grade is 75. And by further comparison, Zachary Thomas, who there's no doubt about his abilities, San Diego State's left tackle, his overall grade is 90.5. He's the fourth best tackle anywhere in college football by that grading system. And so I look at that and I think, okay, well, San Diego State probably knows that. So are they going to take their chances with Edwards, or are they just going to take their best player and line him up where Bonner can see him and dare the Aggies to stop him? Are they going to put Moats on an island one-on-one with them, or are they going to keep a running back in Chip and give him some help? And if that's the case, is that going to be enough to give Bonner the time he needs to throw down the field?
I think what else will help is who's going to run the ball. Because early in the year, Calvin, after a couple of games, like the first four games, Calvin Tyler was really good. One of the best backs in the conference. He had four touchdowns. Yes. He had a couple hundred plus yard game. I think that the BYU game, I think he got hurt. He missed a couple of games. He's slowly been coming back. He had a ton of carries for San Jose State, but only 61 yards, had under 300 to carry. Amazingly, in the loss to Wyoming, he had over 100 yards and a 6 yards attempt, a carry. They need him to help, like you mentioned, who's blocking Bonner, keep him upright, because that's been an issue. Injuries in the first couple of weeks of the season, mostly, I think Bonner was still recovering from an offseason or fall type injury. Mm-hmm. But if they get him to do like 70 yards, you know what I mean? Like do what he did against Washington or North Dakota, where it's basically 14 carries for like 80 yards, I think that'll be enough. They just can't, because Aztecs and Brady Hoke and Kurt Mannix, they'll just attack and find their weakness. And if you're going to throw all the time, they will pin their defense a particular way. Like, okay, fine. We'll drop eight guys. They'll pick, like, okay, they can pick what they want to do. Essentially, they know you're passing more often than not. Because if your running game isn't successful, why put four or five guys? They'll just do three guys or four guys. Like they would go.
They proved last week they could win with three guys up front against Boise State. It would be very easy for them to envision them doing the same thing against this Utah State offensive line. They need to have their best game of the year if they're going to have a chance in this game.
Yeah, because George Law is better than Calvin Tyler. I know Boise was missing their center, but still, it's like if they could do that, three guys, and they could double and Devin Tompkins and just cover the blank in the middle of the field, even though they go deep, but they could just pick and choose. Like, fine, we'll just rush three guys and still get pressure on you. Mm-hmm. So I think Tyler needs to have a big game because then they're going to have to bring another guy up to stop during the game. Plaques will come into play. It could open up a lot more things. I do think regardless, Utah State can break through like the passing, but it's gonna be tough for them to be successful offense. I do have some news here. So it looks like Jordan, like it's kind of about starting, but Jordan, looks like Jordan Brookshire is going to start, which is not too surprising, partly because of the way he played and he's taking first team snaps. Also, there's a potential COVID issue for San Diego State.
Okay.
Yeah. So at least one tight end has tested positive. Kurt Kenny of the San Diego Union Tribune has stepped into any messages toward Aztecs officials have been obviously not returned. Mm-hmm. Even bigger news, Mountain West is not aware of the situation within San Diego State football program.
Okay.
As of Wednesday night, which is basically when we're recording now.
Yes.
So basically said they were not aware of any situation. So, or any issues, I should say, within the program. So at least one tight end, and there are concerns that other players at that position and elsewhere on the team could be sidelined. So using my Sherlock Holmes hat here, if you're a tight end, who do you typically hang around? Wide receivers, offensive line,
mm-hmm.
quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, you hang out with a lot of people. Maybe not necessarily running backs, but that's something to look out for.
Okay.
So yeah, that's some late news here at the moment. So that's, and also remember the holder? That was a problem last week too. They missed the bad hold on the field goal attempt.
That's true.
So we'll see. Cause that mentions here, where is I have it noted here, blah, blah, blah. Backup quarterback Will Haskell and Jake Brownie unavailable due to COVID protocol. And that's why they went to, Jack Brownie. Yeah, my bad. Yeah. They had to change who's holding. But that can be a concern for offensively for San Diego State. So here's what I'm afraid of for San Diego State. I'm gonna call this a Justin Rogers effect because I nailed this 100% completely, where they come off the bench, just play as best as they can, amazingly, because game's on the line, we're trying to win, we're doing this, we're doing that. Once they get a week's worth of practice, they come back to earth. Do you think Jordan Brookshire will have that same effect? I think there's a good possibility he may not be as effective, but no way he's going to be more effective for Utah State than his half of Boise State or half plus.
I mean, I think with the Aztecs, it's always sort of like a low ceiling, high floor proposition anyway. I think the most important thing is he healthy? Which, you know, apparently, you know, the biggest reason why Lucas Johnson got pulled in last week's game was because he wasn't 100%. Which affected his ability to be effective. And so, you know, if you look at, you know, what they did as a team in last week's game, you see, okay, well, they only completed 55% of the passes against Boise State. Same old Aztecs, right?
Yeah.
Jordan Brookshire completed 73% of his passes coming off the bench.
Yeah, that was really, really good.
And so that's one of the thing, the other things I pointed out as far as the statistics worth keeping an eye on, because it may not be like the focal point that a lot of people would think it is, but in the second half of the year, going back to San Diego State's game against Air Force, that game they won on the road, they've completed 61.1% of their passes, you know, between, you know, Brookshire and Lucas Johnson combined. The only time that the passing game really flopped at any point in the second half of the year was that loss to Fresno State. Other than that, like, you know, they're not out there being Carson Strong or Jake Haner or anyone like that, but they are doing exactly what Jeff Hicklinsey needs them to do. They're doing exactly what Brady Hoke wants them to do. And so if Brookshire is healthy, like, he doesn't need to be flashy. He doesn't even need to crack 200 yards in order to be able to get the job done. As long as he plays mistake-free football, which, you know, again, that's exactly what he did last week against Boise State. That's more or less what he's done for the majority of the season. That is the more important thing, is don't make mistakes. You know, if the offense scuffles, no worry, because we have the best punter in America, and he's going to be able to flip the field note for us no matter where we are on it.
True.
So they just need him to sort of play within himself in the same way that every other, you know, solid San Diego State quarterback for the past decade plus has been able to do.
You know who some under-the-radar players I think could have a big game in this matchup?
What's that?
Since we're still talking about Aztecs offense, Jesse Matthews.
Okay.
Because you were on him even last year, like, oh, he's a good receiver. He had the 3 touchdown game recently. I think 5 of his 6 touchdowns have come in the past couple of games. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you're looking at kind of who could under, because normally it's like, we haven't even talked about Greg Bell 1 second yet. We know he needs to do a good job running the ball against Utah State's defense and Justin Rice and everybody. But is Matthews, would you count him as the under the radar player?
Yes. I've always thought he was. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going out there because what he's done the past couple of weeks. Trying to pull up his numbers now, but he had the 3 touchdown game versus Boise? Not Boise State. It was the UNLV game, right?
Yes.
So he has 39 catches, 10 yards a pop, and
An Aztecs wide receiver, 34 catches is positively prolific.
39 catches.
Excuse me.
Yeah. 23 last year, 48 his first year. So but the main thing is, like, he's been improving the past couple of games, whether it be Johnson or Brookshire. Mm-hmm. Because versus Boise, he had 3 for 133. He had San Jose State a couple. Like, look at the teams he scored multiple touchdowns against. They're good. Well, San Jose State, good defense. He lit up Boise State. UNLV, that was a tough game, but still 9 catches, 3 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. He's been doing quite well. He has had 22 of his past 39 catches has been in the past 3 games. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And I think he had 9 catches in the past 2 games. That's wild. He is going to be a key reason because Greg Bell's been good. He hasn't been amazing this year. He's been banged up a touch, but he hasn't been like the main running back in the conference that we thought it would be. Still really, really good, clearly. Mm-hmm. But he's had some ups and downs, right? And so if they get Jesse Matthews involved, that's another area where San Diego State can move the ball and not rely on their, oh, crap, it's 3rd and 5, we know their pass. You know what I mean? Where it's obvious passing.
Yeah, yeah.
Even like 3rd and 4, it's like, oof, what are they going to do? Just because getting 4 yards on 3rd down, running a draw play is not a good idea.
I mean, to me, like, I think the bigger question for the Aztecs in their running game is, who's most likely to deliver them a big play? And in this particular case, and I say that because one of the big differences between these two teams is that The Aztecs have only given up 4 runs of over 20 yards this year, and the Aggies have given up 20. Yeah, which is the fewest and the most in the Mountain West, respectively. And so I look at that element of the game, and I say, you know, if there's something there for the Aztecs to be able to exploit, who are you going to trust to do that? And so while Bell has 7 carries of 20 plus yards, to me, I think about Jordan Bird in his sort of game-changing speed, which, you know, he's not the guy that's going to go out there and get maybe even 10 carries, but, you know, with the handful of carries that he does get, he seems like the most likely candidate to break out like a 30 or 40 yard run that could change the entire tenor of the game. And so I look at that and I think, you know, well, what is he going to be able to do? Like, you know, in terms of, again, I'm going to dip back into PFF grades real quick again, but he's the highest graded San Diego State running back in their entire stable.
I can see that.
You know, better than both the Bells, Greg and Chance, better than Keenan Williams. So, you know, I look at that and I think, you know, if you're looking for other potential under the radar X factors, I'm looking at Bird to be that guy who could potentially change the game. And, you know, you talk about special teams too. You know, he's a guy, he's still a kick returner. He's still the best one in the conference, maybe.
Yeah. Him and Sam Scarver. So that could be double. Like I mentioned, that could be a big thing where Ariza punched deep, Scarver gets 15 yards, which could go from like a getting into your own 4 to the 19 yard line or something.
Yes.
Our board could do the same thing where we're just flipping the position and change it. So special teams is clearly going to be thing to watch, from the holder for San Diego State, the kick returners, because Scarver tied the NCAA record for returns, touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And he's already had at least one this year, and he's been All-American in the past. His receiving capabilities hasn't been living up to that same hype, but that's going to be an area where typically it's not as keen focus. Like, oh, Matt Ariza, yeah, he's great, but gave Scarver a chance to return it. You never know. Like, that could make a big difference where it neutralizes it to a degree. And we write the running games like a one big running play. Like, we've seen that from San Diego State where guys have like 4 carries, but like one's like a 20 something yard play or a 30 yard running play. We've seen that across the board.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing I'll touch about, I want to mention with Ariza real quick though. He has an 84% touchback rate.
Yeah. I know.
And I believe I'm almost certain, I'm trying to look this up as I talk, but I'm almost certain that whoever's handling kickoffs from Utah State does not have an 84% touchback rate.
No, I just mean
there's by comparison, the guy who handles kickoffs for Utah State, Elliot Nimrod, his touchback rate is only 43%. So to me, that seems to make Jordan Bird as likely to make a big special teams play as Savon Scarver.
And then let's just say, like, here's a plausible example. Say Scarver gets a pretty good kick return. Ariza may just boom it in and say, fine, I won't get you at the 5, but you have no chance to get a bigger turn.
Exactly.
And just kick it, do a touchback.
Yeah.
So, or kick it, just do a touch, make it simple and like kick it out of the end zone.
And then, and then it becomes a matter of stringing together long drives.
Yeah,
which against this Aztecs defense, easier said than done.
Yeah, 75 yards every time is not easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to that point, you know, that was one of the other things I brought up in that statistics preview that I provided. I thought it was a really interesting sort of benchmark that the Aggies have kind of inadvertently set for themselves this year. There were only 3 games that they played where they managed to fall under 42% of available yards earned. And so if this is your first time ever hearing about, okay, what is available yards earned? So thinking about starting at the 25. So let's say Matt Ariza kicks it into the end zone to keep it up safe on Scarver's hands. Utah State starts at its own 25-yard line, and they drive to the San Diego State 25-yard line, and whether they kick a punt or go for it on fourth down or whatever, right? So that gives you like 75 yards you can earn and 50 yards that you do earn. And so like by a percentage, that's 66.67% repeating, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that's a clear explainer. So in all but 3 games this year, Utah State managed to beat, or rather to exceed 42% of available yards on offense. Do you want to know where I'm going with this, or have you guessed where I'm going with this?
Let people go. Let people guess. What is
the three games that they didn't?
Yes.
Were the 3 games that they lost.
Oh, shocker. Right?
Yeah, which is not to say that they were that far away. You know, against Boise State, they were roughly 40%. BYU was 41.2%. Wyoming was 41.8%. And again, this is like, to put this in context, on defense, the Aztecs are only allowing 32.7% of available yards per drive. So not an easy task. So if you're thinking about, you know, the average drive starting at the 20 or the 25, you know, you're talking about like 40% of yards would be, what's 80% of 40? I don't want to do that math in my head. But basically, like, you can't get stuck on your own side of the field. You have to at least get to midfield.
Not many.
even if you end up punting it away in order to give yourself a chance. And better yet, if you can put yourself into field goal range to give, you know, even if you can't punch it into the end zone, to give Connor Coles a chance to, you know, punch it in, maybe a 40-yard field goal or two.
So you're saying you want Aggies to kick, settle for field goals, even if they're close. What?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
So,
and that relates to another thing I pointed out in the article. The one team that managed 2 points per drive against this Aztecs defense, Fresno State.
Victorious.
The one game that the Aztecs lost.
So you want, so basically you're saying any points you can get, take them. If you're at the 1 yard line, fourth and one at the goal, fourth and goal at the one, kick the field goal for Utah State.
I mean, in those, in those situations, you go for the end zone, you go for the points.
Cause you need the points.
But if you're like, if it's like fourth and four at the 33 yard line, what would that be? Like a 40?
That's a 50.
I think you sort of have to take that gamble.
Oh man.
Although maybe in that situation, fourth and four at the 30, Anderson just goes for it.
Please, yes, I want that more.
But I think, which is all to say that whenever Utah State has a chance to press its advantage on offense, they have to try and do it.
First play, go deep to Tompkins.
Yeah, and you know, to sort of, you know, elaborate on that point, the only team in the conference that's gone for it on fourth down more than Utah State is Air Force.
Well, that makes sense.
But it's been a coin flip for the Aggies, because their conversion rate on fourth downs is exactly 50%.
I think it all comes back to, honestly, Calvin Tyler Jr. might be the key to win this game.
You might be right.
If he can run just enough to make the Aztecs not just either drop eight or bring the house on when they know it's going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that might be okay with that 4 or 5 guys, more of a traditional type of a defense to pay attention to the run. Just make them pay attention to it. Have a couple plays. Make it work. Do it work. Get Savon Scarver the ball in a quick screen. Do something a little bit different to move the ball. But I think Tyler Jr. is going to be a huge play, as is, we look at the defense, like look at San Diego State, Jesse Matthews. And if he can have like a 7-catch day, would be pretty big for them. I'm not saying they need that from him, but that would be, if he has 7 catches, they're probably winning this game, because he typically gets, like, outside of passer games, he got like 2 catches a game, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Not very often. So I think those are key areas where they could win. I still go back to the Brookshire thing. Like, he played so well last week where it was mostly like momentum. We'll go out there, just going to play to win. He'll go have fun. Not fun, but you know what I mean? The excitement level is within him. Like, oh, let's go. Let's do this. Where he settles down in practices, where he won't be as good. But again, he doesn't need to be as good as he was last week against Boise State to win this game. He could take like a 15% drop back and still be a perfectly adequate asset quarterback for what they want them to proceed, or not proceed, but want them to produce. So a step back for him means, okay, that's about what we expected. He just overachieved and jumped the bar so high versus Boise State. It's like, oh boy, what if he falls back to earth? Well, that's probably what the Aztecs would have had anyways. Brookshire or Johnson. Man, I don't. The over-under is 50 points. Is somebody going to get to 30 points in this game?
Are we thinking about projections? Are we thinking about predictions?
I don't know. What do you? Anything, we've gone quite a bit. Anything else to add for this game?
I feel like I mentioned a lot.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I think we're good. I think we're ready to throw out the picks, man.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously, you know, I have.
I have a question. Who's your under the radar player? I've given a couple. We haven't mentioned Justin Rice once, really. Who's your like guy who's going to kind of he's on the fringe type of guy that if he has a good game.
So like I said, I know that you're going to put out our sort of our aggregate top 10 most important players.
Yep. On Friday.
To me, the most important player on either team is Cole Motes. offensive tackle.
Okay.
Because if he gets lined up against Cameron Thomas, he's got to prove that he can keep Cameron Thomas off of Logan Bonner.
Okay. That's good. That's definitely, because guess what? If you can't predict the quarterback, you can't throw Tompkins. If you can't throw Tompkins, you can't win the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we give our staff picture in here? They're quite interesting from what I can see.
Okay.
You are a dissenter apparently for most people. But what is the SP plus and FEI and all that stuff say?
Okay. So maybe not a huge surprise that they all favor the Aztecs. FEI likes San Diego State by 6.3 points. Mm-hmm. Bill Connolly's SP plus actually has San Diego State as the biggest favorite of the weekend. They favored the Aztecs by 13.8 or 79% win probability. Parker Fleming's advanced stats preview also favors the Aztecs, maybe not by quite as much, but they still give them a reasonable 61.42% win probability. Projected margin between the two teams, 29 to 25, roughly.
13 points?
29 to 25. So about four point difference between the two.
Oh, sorry. I heard you. They said 13 points. So, okay. My bad. Pick center, real quick, ESPN. Team rankings 28.7 to 21.9. Aztecs are 75% chance to win the game as well. So, what's your pick, Matt?
I'm going to take Utah State.
I see you have Utah State. And your score?
I got them winning 28 to 24.
I think regardless, it's going to be a close game. There's no blowout happening.
Yeah, I think you're right.
However, a couple guys in our have a couple high scoring games here a little bit. Not high scoring, okay, but high differential, I should say. But we'll have to make everybody read those picks later on. Now, I'm not going to give it all away for now. Yeah, go click the button to see what we say. I predict San Diego State to win 21-17. So Utah State covers the 6 points.
Okay.
But I honestly think take the under. You have just over 52 points, but if anybody gets to 30, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, I would be too, I'll to be honest.
If it gets to 30, it's because there's probably some sort of a special teams or defensive touchdown, like a quick play.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only way it gets to 30. So I think this should be a really good game. Lowish scoring, not a lot of scoring, but a good amount. But like there's good defensive football too. What Aztecs can do, Utah State has some guys out there. Shaq Bond maybe will make another one-handed interception on the ground. Mm-hmm. Those are always fun to see, right? All these guys, Justin Rice getting there, knocking the ball down from Jordan Brookshire. So anything else to add? Because I think we've covered pretty much everything for this preview.
I think we are pretty much all set. All that's left is waiting for Saturday.
All right. Again, 12 Pacific, kickoff Fox. Check us at MWR.com. I guess I'll say it now. We're going to attempt a halftime show on Twitter Spaces. So check that out, I guess, MWC Wire on Twitter. So I guess, Matt, I'll have to set it up and figure it out because I haven't done those yet. But
It'll be a crash course.
Hey, why not? Just join, ask questions, and yell at us about whatever you want. I don't care.
There you go.
So we can – well – we'll see if we let people talk. We'll see. So I think you have to request people to join to join. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes, but it'll be fun. So we'll have a quick 10-15 minute halftime show of the game. So check out that Twitter. A lot of more content coming out. Our picks, more previews are coming out. We have the player aggregate, like also the position battle edge as well. Mm-hmm. I got to get to work Thursday, Friday, get this stuff posted. So thanks for listening. MWR.com. We'll be back to recap the game on Sunday. And then it's on the bowl season, Matt. And everybody, watch the game. You're a fan of Matt. It's great. If you're Fresno, UNLV, watch good football. This will be a good football game. So we'll see you next time.